Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And Randeep, In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75, $32.96 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood.
We've got a big show coming up this week. We asked for your submissions about players the Canucks could try to acquire this offseason. So we're going to break early and get to those conversations and talk about potential players the Canucks could bring in. And really, we only talked about forwards for the most part. I don't think that there's a defenseman we're going to discuss here based on the submissions that you guys sent in. So the forward group and how the Canucks can address it coming up on the show in just a few minutes from now. But it's been an eventful week for the Vancouver Canucks, albeit a disappointing one, officially eliminated from playoff contention on Wednesday night with the Minnesota Wild beating the San Jose Sharks in overtime in that game to officially end the Canucks' playoff hopes. That was a night after the Canucks became the first team in NHL history to win when trailing by 3 goals in the final minute of the third period. They scored 3 unanswered and then won it in overtime over the Dallas Stars, and then wrapped up the road trip with a victory over the injury-riddled Colorado Avalanche, who didn't have Nathan MacKinnon in their lineup, and got some contributions in both of those games from young players, which was nice to see.
Well, what a 24 hours for the Vancouver Canucks. First, they pull off that improbable comeback victory against the Dallas Stars, you know, led by Pius Suter, but also Atu Ratu played a central role in that game, and then to get knocked out of playoff contention. But they come back, and to your point, you know, Atu Ratu, I want to focus on him and Elias Pettersson in that Colorado matchup, where both of those young guys leading the way. Of course, veterans stepped up too, Kiefer Sherwood, but Ratu winning draws, being central to what the Vancouver Canucks did in that game, and also winning, you know, faceoffs, but also getting in the middle of the ice, deflecting pucks, making life difficult for the opposition, and that led to offense. And Elias Pettersson, just bringing snarl, bringing physicality, bringing confidence to a group right now that I'm sure in that room it's down because you're not making the playoffs, but there's still swagger in this group, and it's a great sign that some of the young guys are bringing it.
And I know a lot of people will be yelling at their radios about this team winning games that don't mean anything and potentially impacting their draft position, and we've had this conversation, it feels like, since time immemorial in this market, but certainly over the last decade, it's a conversation we've had a lot. Ultimately, you know, the Canucks aren't going to change their lottery odds very much at this point in the year. They're kind of locked into where they are for the most part. I guess, you know, if you look at the standings, they could move up or down
14
one place.
16, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and lose sleep over a couple of late season wins, especially when those wins involve your young players. If you were talking about, you know, Rick Tocchet still playing all of his top guys like it was trying to get to the playoffs, and, you know, guys that were a little bit banged up being in the lineup, you know, that would be a different conversation. But we see the guys who are out of the lineup for the Canucks right now. We see the young players that are contributing. And the value for those young players, as much as you might scoff at it, is important. Think about the confidence that Atu Ratu is going to have going into the summer, playing some bigger minutes of the NHL, winning some key faceoffs, scoring some goals and putting up some points here late in the season. And the same goes for Elias Pettersson, as he's sort of brought a physical presence, as we alluded to with the scrap against Colorado. But you know, these are key young pieces of your organization going forward in all likelihood. Although, again, we'll talk about the summer coming up. Some of them could be traded out of town in the coming weeks and months. You don't know how things are going to play out in the summer. But ultimately, right now, you expect these players to be in Vancouver next year, or at least within the organization, whether they make the NHL roster or not. And setting them up well to feel good about themselves, have a good summer, and come back and take a step and try to make this team and try to push some of the guys that are already on the roster, I think is more important than affecting your lottery odds one way or another.
Yeah, and sometimes we focus on the picks that are yet to be made rather than the ones that you've already made, right? Getting that development internally to say, all right, you've made this pick, you've acquired this player via trade. How do you make them better inside your organization? And with Elias Pettersson, we've seen that. Against Vegas, he floored Tanner Pearson in a battle in front of the net. Against Colorado, it was against another gritty player in Logan O'Connor, ends up fighting him. And I loved Dan Murphy's tweet post-game against Colorado, where he confirmed that Elias Pettersson said that that fight was his first fight ever. like in any situation ever. We're talking about in life. So
no schoolyard scraps for like that. Elias Pettersson back in Sweden growing up.
He was a good kid growing up, so no scraps. But, you know, it's that sort of experience where you looked at the bench, his teammates love that. There was a big smile on his face. And when you go into that room, you're feeling confident. You're feeling confident the next season as well. Hopefully, when he comes into camp to say, I can be a bit of a leader on this team. It's moments like this, whether it's the final four or five games of the season, that's where you start to feel confident as a young player.
So the Canucks young players are gaining confidence, and Vancouver has three games left in the regular season, all of them on home ice. It's the Minnesota Wild to begin the final three-game homestand on Saturday night. And, you know, that has to be the selling point right now for the end of this season is if you come to the rink to watch the Canucks, you're going to see young players, you're going to see them get opportunity, and hey, they are thriving with that opportunity as well. And, you know, it's not what many fans in this market wanted. Of course, we all expected the playoffs to be a reality this year. This season hasn't gone the way that anyone expected for a number of reasons. But, you know, this is a team that's still going to finish the season hard, and they're still competing, which I think within the greater context of the conversation around Rick Tocchet and his future, which I'm sure we're going to get into more on next week's show as we put our final bow on the Canucks season that was and wrap things up and look ahead to the offseason. But one thing you can say without a doubt is that this team, and especially the young players being given opportunity, are not quitting on the organization, and they're not quitting on their head coach either.
And I think that's a real, you know, a tip of the cap to Rick Tocchet. He's got the players buy-in where they believe in him. And even in these games where, yes, they are meaningless in terms of the standings, the coach is able to tap on the shoulder of these guys and say, hey, I still need your best effort. In professional sports, those professional athletes don't respond sometimes when it's the end of the season. These guys are to their head coach.
And there's plenty of criticism to go around this year. We're going to hear from the stakeholders in the organization in the coming week, I would imagine. So we'll have plenty of time to break all that down and talk about what went wrong and what needs to change going forward. But up next after the break, we're going to talk about who the Canucks could target this offseason to fill some of the holes on their roster. That's still to come right here on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood.
And if you've missed any part of the show listening on the radio, it does live as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. Make sure to subscribe to that. You get the daily show every weekday with Sat and Reach. You get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick. And you get In the Booth with us weekly during the season as well. And when Canucks news breaks in the offseason, which is getting closer and closer now, Randeep, the Canucks Central podcast feed is the place to go for breaking news, emergency podcasts, and the latest up-to-date coverage on this team.
That's right. There's nowhere else you should be looking. It's Sportsnet 650 and the Canucks Central podcast.
And we're going to open the mailbag now. This week, we asked you to submit players to us that you would like to see Vancouver go and acquire this offseason, because now we're shifting into summer mode with the Canucks having only three games left in the regular season. Their playoff hopes officially have been wiped out. So we got lots of responses from you. We're going to go through some players here, talk about how legitimate they might be as acquisitions for this Canucks team, and ultimately whether they would be a good fit. So our first submission comes in from Doodle Hockey on Twitter, who writes in and asks, Rossi seems like a pretty decent target that might be available. I also like Shane Wright out of Seattle. So we'll tackle these two players. Let's start with Marco Rossi of the Minnesota Wild, a talented player, certainly a player that could help this forward group. He does play center ice. He is a left-hand shot. And That would be an interesting one because he is a pending restricted free agent right now. So, you know, there could be opportunity to try and acquire him this offseason as he becomes an RFA.
Well, there's a couple of things to watch in Minnesota overall. He's a 60-point player, but they've got some really good players there. Matthew Boldy, Kirill Kaprizov, who needs a new contract. And Batch, there's also the, you know, there's the buyouts are coming off the books there in Minnesota as well. So they're going to have some cash to take care of, but they're also going to have, you know, players that they need to pay. So is Marco Rossi a part of that? Part of this will also depend on what they do in the playoffs. Like, I think that's going to be a really important factor for a lot of teams we discuss here. Do you fizzle out in the first round or are you able to do something? And Marco Rossi, even though he's a skilled young player, he's probably, I would say, number four or five on that pecking order right now. So, you know, where does he fit long term, especially if you have to pay your top player in Kirill Kaprizov?
Yeah, he's 23 years old, too. Can play the middle of the ice. That's obviously an important factor here for this organization going forward. So, you know, this is a guy that certainly could be targeted by the Canucks this summer. And if they were to target Marco Rossi, they could do it with an offer sheet. And let's sort of talk about that philosophy as a whole, because I think there's a few players we're going to run into it with. And by the way, I've got to do a mea culpa on our hot take episode last week. I said they should offer sheet Luke Hughes. What I missed in the fine print on Puckpedia, that in fact, he is a 10.2C RFA, which means that he cannot be offer sheeted. So my hot take was so hot that it's impossible. But the offer sheet, we saw the St. Louis Blues use it to great effect last year, targeting Dylan Holloway and Philip Broberg with the Edmonton Oilers. So first of all, let's start with the concept of the offer sheet, whether the Canucks could use it to try and improve their roster and bring in an age-appropriate player that fits with their core, and then we can get into Rossi specifically.
And I think when we do that, we have to be very mindful of the compensation, because if you are offering somebody a contract and they agree to that offer sheet, you got to make sure you have a certain amount of draft picks. And, you know, if we're talking about the high end batch, we're talking about $11.5 million players. You're looking at four first round picks in the next five drafts starting 2026. Like, you have to have those in order to make a deal happen. Below that, if you're talking about $9.1 to $11.4 million, you need two first round picks, 2026 second round pick and a 2026 third round pick, and then so on and so forth. So we're, in order to get an offer sheet or really get the player to the table and their agent, you have to make it worth their while. Kind of like St. Louis did with Broberg and Dylan Holloway last year, based on reports from folks in St. Louis that was initiated by the agent. But whatever it may be, that's the concept of, do you offer enough money? Does the player agree? And do you have the compensation required?
Yeah, and I think what'll be interesting is, you mentioned, and we talked about this on last week's show too, that the agent kind of initiated those offer sheets. So do we see this as a more common practice because more agents look at this as a legitimate route to get their clients to places where they can play bigger roles and have more success? And then you've got to look, and we'll talk about this in a minute, about Marco Rossi specifically, as he was brought up by the listener.
And that's the key here. Where, you know, are we identifying players that might be kind of stuck in a logjam in the middle six or maybe on the second line where they could be first liners or they could be top six players? And I think that's the key. Dylan Holloway was stuck on a third and fourth line last year with the Edmonton Oilers, and he clearly didn't like that. Philip Broberg was playing on the right-hand side, even though he's a left-handed defenseman.
And he wasn't an everyday player for the Oilers in the playoffs.
Exactly, and if he was playing on his offside on top of that when he was getting games, he was not a fan of that either. So who are certain players that may feel like they can do more in situations? And Marco Rossi might be one of those players.
He's been playing with Kaprizov and Zuccarello of late.
Sure, and really with him, it might come down to money. Does Minnesota have enough money to throw around? But who are some other players that, based on situations, whether their team's not playing well or they're not getting enough playing time, who are some players that maybe just might be a little sick of a situation? And I got a name here I want to throw out. I think J.J. Paterka in Buffalo might be a player that, not a center, a left winger. He's been playing with Ryan McLeod and Jack Quinn on that second line in Buffalo most recently. Speedy player, a really strong player, 60-plus points this year. That's a player I know that I'm bringing up here as well, but there was one of our listeners that tweeted in as well. Paterka's a player I look at to say speedy, can produce, and Buffalo is starting to get a bit of a stink back in the NHL, where players maybe not so enthusiastic to stay there.
Yeah, and you know, Paterka is an interesting candidate. You're right, he has played mostly as a winger. I think he can play down the middle as well. Whether he's a guy that you would trust to actually be a regular top six center is a question, but you know, you can kind of learn from the past on this in terms of the kind of player they might want to target, and whether it's with an offer sheet, whether it's via trade, whether it's via free agency, however it goes, think back to when this organization, obviously under a different management group, brought in JT Miller. When Miller was acquired, I don't think anybody saw him being a number one center or a potential top line center. He had mostly been a winger to that point in his NHL career. And in his early days as a Canuck, he did really play mostly as a winger. And it was only as the need arose that he shifted to center and found a home there. So is there a guy somewhere that has the ability to play down the middle, but maybe has been miscast as a winger because of the mix on another team, that you could bring in and give an opportunity and maybe he could thrive, much like JT Miller did as a Vancouver Canuck? I don't know if Paterka is that guy. And the other thing about both these players, both Rossi and Paterka, are 23. I think if you're trying to turn things around really quickly for the Canucks and try to be competitive next year, and obviously you are because of the Quinn Hughes scenario and the fact that he can sign an extension with this club in, what is it, 15 months from now, do you want a player that's more like 24, 25, 26 than a 23-year-old player? Ultimately,
both 60-point scorers, though.
Yeah, but ultimately, beggars can't be choosers, right? Like, there's only going to be so many options on the market, and you may have to just settle for what you can get. But bringing in a young player, 60-point capability, maybe higher upside, maybe greater ability to produce in the proper role in the proper situation, that kind of feels like the bets the Canucks might have to make. And whether they target players like this via offer sheet or whether they just look to outright acquire them via trade, both of which could be doable, especially if the return you have to give in a trade is not as much as the offer sheet compensation. I think Rossi and Paterka are both legitimate options for the Canucks. It's just whether they could find a way to get them to Vancouver.
Exactly. And Mike also tweeted this in when you asked for submissions on players. So shouts to Mike on that. But you know, one thing I'll say about Paterka, very comfortable carrying the puck, which is something that this organization wants. Guys that are able to attack up the ice. Martin Natchez, of course, was linked to the Vancouver Canucks prior to getting traded to Colorado. He hangs onto the puck. He's fast. JJ Paterka might be the poor man's version of that, so to speak. But he's still younger. Remember that. So there's still room in his game to grow. But, you know, I look at Paterka and that profile. If you're not able to get a center, can you get a speedy winger? You're going to have to get both at some point. But this is kind of the profile, I think, of if you're going to replace Brock Besser's goals and he doesn't come to Vancouver, which doesn't seem likely, and he doesn't stay in Vancouver, is that something that you look at? All right, we need a guy that can still give you 25 to 30 goals, but the profile has to be speedy winger.
Yeah, and the next name on our list is another centerman, and I imagine we're going to be talking a lot about centerman because that's the Canucks' number one need. As mentioned, Shane Wright. Now, this is the first name that's been thrown out there that I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not going to be possible for the Canucks to acquire him. Couple reasons why. One, Wright, little bit younger, 21 years of age, still under team control in Seattle for two more seasons beyond this one, the 25-26 and the 26-27 season, before he becomes a restricted free agent in the summer of 2027. Wright has taken a big step in his game. I can understand why you'd want to acquire him. He's had a really good season in Seattle. But teams don't like to give up young, cost-controlled players, especially when they've shown something at the NHL level. And that's where Shane Wright is now, making under $900,000 a season in a league where the cap's going to go up and some of the contracts are going to get a little bit out of control here. I can't imagine Seattle giving up Shane Wright unless you're giving them an absolute haul in return.
The reason that it was such a shock when he dropped in the draft is he's a right shot center. He's got the profile of a two-way game. And, you know, he's a big boy, too. He can, you know, handle his weight, and he's a little, you know, 6 foot. And now he's also had his kind of turning point where the last couple of years he was figuring out the game. He was starting to excel maybe at the AHL level last season. This year, he's a 42-point scorer as of right now, as of recording. So he's at a high right now. So, you know, I don't see that move. I know that Seattle is going to be looking for an impact piece this offseason. They need more. Matty Beniers has taken a bit of a step back. You know, he's not the same player he was a couple of years ago. Started off this season slowly, got better as it went on. Shane Wright's taken a step, but they still need some star power there. They still need some impact pieces next to their young guys. So they're going to be active in some way or form, and it's probably in the forward group. Now, I don't see them dangling Shane Wright to get that piece, though.
No, I think he's one of their most prized assets at the moment. I think it's more likely they'd move Beniers than they would move Wright, based on the way things have trended. And ultimately, I think they'd want to keep both of them, and I don't expect either of those guys to be moved. But, you know, as much as Shane Wright might be a great fit, again, I think he profiles a little young for this core group. Obviously, you could get him. The team control and the low salary is very appealing, but the problem is that's going to be very appealing to Seattle as well. Next name on the list, written in by Justin in East Van, and I think he's representing one of his buddies here. Justin says, should the Canucks acquire Joel Eriksson Ek from the Minnesota Wild?
Coming off a four-goal game, good luck trying to get him.
Is it Austin and Langley that always writes in about him?
I feel like it's both of them. They might be like... They might be tag-teaming this Joel Eriksson Ek to Vancouver situation. But, hey, if Vancouver can make that happen, he's one of the best two-way centers in the game. But why would Minnesota get rid of him?
Well, you know, this is an interesting thing. They've got team control on, you know, relatively good cost all the way till 2029. He's making $5.25 million per season. He's one of the best two-way centers in the game. 28 years of age. So, you know, the fact that they've got team control for a few more years is nice. It's not like you'd have to acquire him and then sign him into his mid-30s. But you're right. You know, the Minnesota Wild aren't tanking. They're not rebuilding. They finished ahead of the Canucks this year. They're going to the playoffs. You would have to really pry him out of Minnesota. That's not a player they're going to give up easily. Now, if you're willing to, you know, look at a lot of big options on the trade market, and we've talked about the kind of pieces the Canucks could move. They've got a first-round pick this year, obviously a first-round pick next year that would be incredibly valuable. Tom Vilander, who's now going to go to the national title game with BU, will be a sought-after trade chip, I would imagine, that teams will ask for. Elias Pettersson would be sought after in trades. Jonathan Lekkermäki would be sought after in trades. So the question you have to ask yourself is, how many of those sorts of pieces are you willing to give up to improve this team in the short term? Because it might be multiples of those pieces to go and legitimately get a guy like Eriksson Ek out of Minnesota. And that might not even work either, because they don't want to rebuild. So what do they want with future pieces?
Well, exactly. And that's the point here, because I'm going to make a prediction. I think Bill Guerin's starting lineup, the top three centers on that team next year, will be Joel Eriksson Ek, Marco Rossi, and Brock Nelson. I think they're going to probably put in a pretty good pitch to have Brock Nelson as their third-line center, and that's a 1-2-3 punch that could be very strong if Marco Rossi stays on the team. But you're not taking a step back if you're getting Kirill Kaprizov on that team. If you've got, you know, a pretty strong team on the back end as well with some of those guys. So I'm just wary that Bill Guerin's going to take a step back. He doesn't do that very often, and now he's got cap space to deal with. So Eriksson Ek, on that front, also, what are you giving up, to your point? You know, he's not going to come cheap. And that age profile, as much as I like the player, I feel like this team needs to get somebody a little bit closer to their mid-20s if you have that choice. You know, getting a little bit more control. I'm not a huge fan of getting somebody in their 28, 29 range. Eriksson Ek's a good player, but I feel like going a little younger here, having a little bit longer runway, is important for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I love the player. I think he would be perfect for the Canucks, to be honest. I know he's a little bit older than you might like, but you are talking about a team that wants to compete immediately. So you need a guy that can be an impact player right away. And I think Eriksson Ek is the perfect profile of player to be a 2C behind resurgent Elias Pettersson.
Taking where the tough matchups.
He can play the shutdown minutes. He can win all the key faceoffs. He can be out there in matchup situations. You know, that is the role that Eriksson Ek plays, and he would play it to a T in Vancouver. I just don't know if this organization, with the number of assets it has and the number of other holes it has to fill on this roster too, especially if Besser and Pugh Suter both move on in free agency, then that's multiple centermen that you've got to bring in. I don't know if you could afford to use too many assets on one of those pieces. You might have to spread them out in multiple deals to get your roster to where you want to be. Ultimately.
Well, that's the thing, and we don't know who's going to be available. That's the tricky thing about this, is the playoffs are going to have a big impact on who is available this offseason via trade. If there's disappointed teams out there, there might be all of a sudden players that we didn't think were on the trade market that are going to be available. And I'll give you a hypothetical here. I know this name is on our list of some of our listeners posing.
Well, we can get to it.
Okay, but I want to give you a hypothetical at some point. So when we get to this player, I'll bring it up at that point. Let's move forward.
For sure. Next one from Woodrow, the eligible bachelor. Can the Canucks lure John Tavares out of Toronto like they did with Matt Sundin?
The pajama boy himself?
Yeah, the answer to this is no, and that's the exact reason why, is because he's a hometown player playing in Toronto. They're a contending team right now. And this isn't Vancouver specific. I don't see John Tavares playing anywhere that isn't for the Toronto Maple Leafs next year. I think he's the kind of player that might take a hometown discount to stay with that core group and ultimately try and do something. And again, you know, a large part of the context around this is going to be how the Leafs perform in the playoffs this year, and what their roster looks like going into next season, whether they extend Mitch Marner, how much they pay him. You know, that'll be an interesting scenario. That's not the name I like the most out of the Maple Leafs. So, you know, again, I can understand why you would have Tavares as a fit, you know, maybe a little bit old for the curve you're looking for, similar to the conversation we just had about Eriksson Ek, but could fill in as a really good 2C behind Elias Pettersson if that's the route you're going to go. I just don't think John Tavares wants to come to Vancouver or anywhere that isn't the six.
He's had a heck of a year in Toronto, but I think a big part of that batch is also William Nylander. William Nylander's been playing on that line with him, and Nylander, he's not going to be brought up in Hart Trophy conversation this year, but he's been a really important piece for this Maple Leafs team. Last 2 years, he's been driving play. And when you have a player like that, that is shown he is a threat, playmaking and goal scoring, it's going to also make John Tavares play better as well. And I think Tavares has been better this year. Maybe it's the stress of not having the C on his chest and he's able to just play freely. He's been good too. But when you've got Willie Nylander on your right wing, it certainly makes you a better player. Is that a bet you want to make on a player that age to take a new, you know, team, a new contract in for the Vancouver Canucks? That's not a player I look at. I think he's really good for what the Leafs need right now. I don't know if that's going to translate to other markets and other teams.
And let's talk about that other name I mentioned in Toronto that I don't think anybody submitted, and I'm kind of surprised at that because we've talked about offer sheets. That seems to be sort of the buzz conversation at the moment. And if they have to extend Marner, if they do bring Tavares back, what about a guy like Matthew Nyes? I know this is a name that you've brought up before that you like as someone they could target. Obviously, he's not a centerman, so he's not filling that role down the middle, but he would look pretty good in this top six in place of a guy like Brock Besser.
This season, there are three power forwards in the NHL that are having a lot of success. There is Tom Wilson, Brady Tkachuk, and Matthew Nyes. Matthew Nyes has 29 goals this year. He is projecting to be the next power forward in this league, and I think he should be a candidate for an offer sheet. This is a guy that is showing that he can be a top-line player, and sure, he's got help. There's no doubt about that, playing alongside Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, but there's talent there. There is physicality there. He fought Zach Whitecloud earlier this season and absolutely took it to Zach Whitecloud. And we know Whitecloud is a very tough customer. So there's elements to his game. Now the question is, how much would you have to offer him? And how much would it be? No, how much would it take for the Toronto Maple Leafs to say, no, we can't do this? I feel like with Matthew Nyes, they'd probably match most offers as long as that Mitch Marner contract is sorted out.
Yeah, that's the big variable in Toronto that makes it interesting is Mitch Marner could make an absolute king's ransom with the Leafs and eat up a ton of their available cap space. Now, if Marner leaves, then it's going to be the opposite. The Leafs are going to be able to throw out money to anybody they want, and they're certainly not going to let someone grab Matthew Nyes out from underneath them. But in a world where Marner makes a massive deal and stays as a Maple Leaf, That's where they could be vulnerable. That's where that could be an option. And that's the kind of player. And again, we don't know the future of the head coach with the Canucks too, but I look at Matthew Knies and I say Rick Tocchet player.
Yes.
I really do.
No doubt about that, right? Like, we're talking about a 55-point player in his second full season in the NHL, but here is the problem I see with the scenario. Love the player. I think if it's possible, you make that happen. But is he a player that would be characterized as sitting in a weird spot with his current team? Like, uncertainty, not getting an opportunity. He's playing next to Austin Matthews. And
yeah, so this is the other thing we also have to always remind people when we talk about offer sheets. You can't just sign the player to the offer sheet.
You have to agree.
The player has to sign it with you. And so for Matthew Knies, is he going to look at his situation in Toronto and the potential situation in Vancouver? And, you know, all due respect to the Canucks, they've got some good pieces. They would probably tell him that they would play him with Elias Pettersson or give him a prime role in that regard. And prior to this season, I think you would have been able to make a really good pitch on that regard and talk about, man, that would be a prime place to go and sign. And that's part of the reason Jake DeBrusque signed as a Vancouver Canuck. But coming off this year with Elias Pettersson, with the uncertainty around his game, I don't know if that pitch carries as much weight as it used to. And when you're playing alongside a guy that nearly scored 70 goals last year, I don't know if you're eager to leave that spot and leave that opportunity that you've been given.
And on the opposite wing, you've got one of the premier playmakers in the NHL, Mitch Marner, too. So if Marner sticks around, you've got a really solid trio on that top line. And there's also the element of he's from Phoenix, Arizona, which is Austin Matthews territory.
Yeah.
So there's an attachment, an emotional attachment there where you're saying, hell of a player, 6'3", 230 pounds, an absolute beast of a player, but would he want to leave? And I think that's a key part of that. So even though I like the idea, I don't see that one playing out so much.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it could happen. You never know. But I think this is the beginning of a trend with some of these players we're talking about, which is would be great fit in Vancouver. Is it realistic that the Canucks could bring them in? And oftentimes the answer to the first part is yes, they would be a tremendous fit, but no, it's going to be too hard to acquire them. But hey, you know what? We've seen Alvin and Rutherford pull some rabbits out of their hats before, and that's what's going to make this offseason so fascinating. The next one comes in from Bergie on Twitter. Nick Ehlers would be a great fit in the top six if you can get him at a good price. And that last part is the key part because, you know, you and I were talking about this off air. This offseason could set up to be like the 2016 offseason where there were some big contracts thrown out to some players that didn't deserve that kind of money and ultimately were criticized in their markets for the contracts that they signed that year. And we're very familiar with that year here in Vancouver because who did the Canucks sign? They signed Louis Erickson to that six-year, $6 million per season deal that year. And because the cap's going up, because lots of teams are going to have flexibility, this feels like it'll be one of those big money sweepstakes kind of summers. And Nick Ehlers is going to be one of the most prized unrestricted free agent possessions, especially in the winger market. He is going to get paid and he is going to get paid a lot wherever he goes. Now, could that team be Vancouver? Yes. Would he be a great fit here with his speed and one-shot goal-scoring ability to replace Brock Besser on the wing? Absolutely he would. But he basically, I would imagine, is going to have his pick of teams in the league, and it's going to come down to who's willing to pay him the most, what is the best fit, what's the best pitch he can receive. And could the Canucks be in that conversation? Yes, but they might have to eat up a ton of their available cap space to get him to come to Vancouver.
He certainly fits the profile batch that what Canucks the Canucks would be looking at, right? Once again, a very fast player, a player that picks up the puck in the neutral zone, his own zone, is good at zone exits, controlled entries, and can help drive play, which is something that this team hasn't had consistently. And really, in terms of puck carriers, outside of Quinn Hughes and for, you know, a span of 15 games with Filip Hedl, they really haven't had that. So you need that, and he would certainly be a good fit. Now, I don't know what's a part of the Canucks pitch other than the money. Maybe fellow countryman Yannick Hansen can be a part of that, and he can help make the pitch as well. Of course, a contributor here on Sportsnet 650. But there is going to be a lot of interest in Nick Ehlers. The interesting thing with Ehlers, though, is He's never really gone above 64 points in his career, so he's a 64-point career high. He might beat that this year in the final few games, but you know there is an element of, can he up that ceiling a little bit? Obviously, he's in his late 20s now, in a different situation where he's maybe playing a little bit more because with Rick Bonus, he didn't have the confidence of the coach. Now, you know, going to a new team, can he have more of a role and can he even generate more offense? Can you get him to be a point per game player, maybe an 80-point player? And I think if you're going to pay him what we expect him to get paid, there would be an expectation to say, all right, you probably need to be a point per game player.
He feels like a perfect winger for Elias Pettersson,
sure,
doesn't he? Right? He's got the speed. He's got the shooting ability. Petey has always talked about himself being a pass-first guy. Well, Ehlers is the trigger man that Pettersson could use if that's the role he wants to play going forward. We've got another player from Winnipeg that was sent in, but let's stick with the unrestricted free agents because Tyler Bennett, who might be biased, writes in and says, Sam Bennett. And much of what I said in the preamble to talking about Ehlers applies to Sam Bennett too. He's going to be arguably the most coveted free agent centerman on the market if he gets to market on July 1st. And as a guy that doesn't necessarily produce a ton of points, even though he's served an invaluable role in Florida, I would really worry about Sam Bennett being a contract that you look back on like Vancouver look back on the Louis Erickson deal, or like we look back on that Milan Lucic deal from that same offseason in 2016.
Yeah, this is a player I love in a playoff series. I think he on your team is a heart and soul guy. He will give everything to win a game. But 689 regular season games plus the 84 he's played in the playoff, those are hard miles. He does not take shifts off as a physical brand of hockey. And to your point, you know, he's hit 50 points once in his career, which if you look at it, you know, that's a dangerous situation because he's going to be making money that is going to be high end money.
We're talking like $9 million bucks potentially.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you're committing cap dollars to a player, and for the Vancouver Canucks, I think you have to show something in the regular season. He needs to put up, or whoever they target, with the uncertainty with Elias Pettersson, in the sense that what kind of PD do you get next year? You need somebody in that 1 or 2C spot to provide points. You can't have a question mark there, Batch. So I think you need a little bit more certainty than Sam Bennett's overall offensive production. But the question I had earlier, and this is what I was going to throw up, it was Sam Bennett as a UFA signing for the Vancouver Canucks with the potential big dollar value, or do you give up assets for Joel Eriksson Ek? One guy you get for free in the sense that it's only money, you're not giving up assets. The other guy, maybe you don't have as much control, but you have to give up premium assets.
Yeah, the interesting part of that conversation, though, is that you still have other spots to fill on your roster. So, you know, as much as I would look at it and say I never want to give up assets, especially some of the prime young assets the Canucks have, because they don't have a ton of them, let's be honest. We're talking about Vlander, we're talking about Pettersson. Maybe you could sell somebody on Mancini if you wanted to move him on again. Lekkomäki, certainly
pick, yep.
Two first-round picks over the next couple of years that would have a bunch of value. I think the 2026 one more so than the 2025 one. But if you use up all your available cap space on one guy, then how are you going to replace Brock Besser on the wing? And ultimately, if that guy's Sam Bennett, I would be really scared that you're not getting a good return on investment for paying that much money. So I actually would say that I'd rather give up assets for Eriksson Ek than getting Bennett for free, just because of the salary cap limiting your ability to bring in other players and giving you less flexibility to flesh out the rest of your roster.
When it comes to that center position, I would rather go via trade for this team. And the part of the reason I say that is whether it's Eriksson Ek, which I'm not sure is a realistic acquisition, but you know, this was a submission that was made earlier.
We'll use him as the example here.
Exactly. But even a younger centerman where you're saying maybe it's 25, 26, potentially 24 years old, I'm okay giving up an asset for a player that is younger, potentially faster, potentially buying at maybe an undervalued asset on the current team that they're at, or maybe a player that just needs a change. Maybe it's a situation where they're not exactly happy or the team has been struggling a bit, similar to a Dylan Cousins in Buffalo situation, right? Is there somebody out there of that quality or of that kind of potential that you could target? And we don't know who that is right now. I think the playoffs is going to have a huge say in who is available come June.
Let's circle back to Winnipeg because Ivy wrote in and said, should the Canucks sign Gabriel Vilardi? And he's an interesting one because that would be another offer sheet candidate or someone that you would trade for. And the Winnipeg Jets obviously have a ton of great players, and they have a number of pending restricted and unrestricted free agents. So looking at their Puckpedia page right now, we already talked about Nikolai Ehlers. Alex Iafallo, Brandon Tanev, and Mason Appleton are all pending UFAs in the forward group. You know, those are middle to bottom six players, so you may not be worried, but they got to pay Neil Pionk this summer, potentially. Then there are RFAs. Vilardi, Barron, Kupari, and Sandberg. And I do wonder if Winnipeg is susceptible to the same kind of offer sheet that affected Edmonton last year, where you don't offer sheet one guy, you offer sheet two of them. And you make them make a choice, one or the other, or neither, or both. And that's what I look at when I look at this Winnipeg team and maybe trying to pry Gabriel Vilardi out of there. But again, Gabriel Vilardi, tremendous player, has had a tremendous year. You're talking about a lot of offer sheet compensation to get him out of Winnipeg, I would imagine.
The two players I look at, if you're going to do that Holloway-Broberg-style double offer sheet, Gabe Vilardi and Dylan Sandberg. Sandberg's had a heck of a year, really solidifying himself as a top four defenseman on that team. And Gabe Vilardi, you want to make him think about it, right? Is there a better situation? Listen, that Winnipeg top line for a good chunk of the season was the best top line in all of hockey. So you're going to have to really pry this player away. But if you don't get Gabe Vilardi, you know, for Vancouver, it's a tricky one because you're looking at a player in Sandberg where you'd have a redundancy. So maybe he's not the player that you offer sheet, but I could see another team taking a run at both of those guys. The player that I think from Winnipeg, out of the names that you listed, it's not on the high end. The one that I see would actually be pretty realistic for Vancouver in a second line role is Alex Iafallo. He plays a certain style that fits that Vancouver's kind of what they want to do. He's a guy that shouldn't be that expensive.
He's older than I thought he was, though. He's 31.
He's 31, but you might be able to get him on a couple-year deal where you're saying, hey, we need a guy that can score. We need a guy that is able to move up and down a lineup. And for Iafallo, you know, you're looking at probably a 15-goal guy around that 30-point range. And it's more of a short-term fit, but you're looking for somebody that can play, you know, be aggressive on the forecheck, has kind of hovered around that 15 to 17 goal range his entire career. So if Brock Besser's not a part of the fold and you need a couple of more guys that maybe are not on the high end, but you still need help on that second, third line, I think Iafallo might be a player that you look more as a value signing rather than a high end signing.
Okay, we're a little bit tight for time here, so we'll burn through some of the remaining names submitted here. Ultimately, you know, putting a wrap on Vilardi, I think great fit, would be great if you could get him. Jets aren't going to let him go easily. That's going to be a hard needle to thread. Mike sent in a bunch of names. We already talked about J.J. Paterka. He also mentions Mason McTavish from the Anaheim Ducks, and that's a name that I've heard thrown around a lot because that is an age-appropriate center iceman that would make a lot of sense fitting into the Canucks top six. The problem, though, Mason McTavish has had a tremendous year with the Anaheim Ducks, and even though he is a 22-year-old restricted free agent, that's another one of those situations where the Ducks are not going to want to let that guy walk. But the unique thing about him, as opposed to Vilardi or Knies, is you could sell him on situation, because his situation in Anaheim compared to Vancouver, Vancouver would look pretty good coming here and getting to play a top six role in a Canadian market, potentially play with a guy like Jake DeBrusk. I don't know, although the Ducks have lots of young players that are up and coming, you could maybe sell McTavish on a move to Vancouver.
Yeah, I think with the challenge with the RFA move, though, would be Anaheim's got cap space and they probably value this guy a lot. Remember, I think I brought up his name a couple of months ago on the podcast, on In the Booth, and it was when he was struggling where, hey, could this be a potential move you make for a player because maybe he's not projecting the way that they wanted him? And right after that, he ended up going off. He put up, you know, a number of points. He had a great game against the Vancouver Canucks in that 5-2 game that Anaheim ended up winning. So it's going to be difficult. I see this more as a, if it's going to be something that can be done for Vancouver. And, you know, we've talked a lot about Elias Pettersson, but if I don't see this as an RFA play. I see this as a trade play. If this is going to happen, that's a huge if. You know, is that a player that is a part of a package for Elias Pettersson? If he is indeed not going to be in Vancouver, you know, we don't know. We've heard all those conversations. I could see why the Anaheim Ducks would explore that, because they're looking for a high end. They want to take a step. And if you're looking for a quality player down the middle for Vancouver, that's a young player and a part of your future, is that something you look at? RFA, I think Anaheim matches anything that Vancouver throws their way.
The only thing I wonder about the Ducks, and we just talked about is with the Jets, is could they be another double offer sheet team? Because I'm looking again on Puckpedia right now. Isaac Lundestrom, RFA, he could be a good depth center ice fit, especially if you move on from Pugh Suter. Brett Leason, Sam Colangelo, Mason McTavish, Nikita Nesterenko, Drew Helison, Lucas Dostal, their goaltender, who kind of had a coming-out season and played more than a lot of people thought than he might because of John Gibson. All those guys are RFAs, so they could be susceptible to a double offer sheet, depending on what the dollar amount looks like, but they are also one of those teams that have cap space too, so that might not be as realistic as it was for a contending team like the Oilers.
Yeah, the Oilers are, you know, I think the teams that we look at across the league, Anaheim just seems like a team that will be willing to spend. One thing on the Winnipeg Jets before we move on, though, and with a rising cap, some Canadian teams, especially the small market teams, getting to that floor and trying to spend to the cap is going to be a real challenge. So when you talked about two offer sheets going to Winnipeg,
that forces them to talk
more
about that. That's not a question about cap. That's a question about real dollars.
Real dollars. And can they afford it? Especially in Winnipeg. And I hate to say this because I'm a proud Canadian, but with that small rink there, they have a lot of trouble attracting season ticket holders, even for that smaller rink.
There is a limit on the revenue they can generate. It's
exactly
being generated in Canadian dollars. We all know what's happening with the economy right now.
And if you're a team, one of the American teams or the Canadian teams, do you take advantage of that? Do you use their weakness against them? And that's the sad reality. As the cap goes up, some teams are not going to be able to compete.
Okay, two more names here. Josh Norris, quickly. We saw him traded at the deadline in that flip for Dylan Cousins. And it's interesting that Mike submitted this, because in my mind, I initially thought, not going to happen. He's already been traded, but he's been traded to Buffalo. So that opens up an opportunity.
And I feel like Buffalo is going to do a lot of stuff this offseason where they need to shake it up. We've already talked about Paterka. Norris could be a play where, hey, you get an individual, you get a player from Ottawa, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's a long-term fit. So this could be a valid one. And remember, he is tight with one Quinn Hughes, right? Going back to their Michigan days, of course, being Michigan players as well, University of Michigan, and growing up in the state of Michigan. So potential batch, I think, on Josh Norris, he's just got to stay healthy. Like, this is a guy that hasn't stayed healthy over the last 2 or 3 years. I like the player when he's healthy, but how often is that the case?
Last name we've got here, Maverick Bourque from the Dallas Stars, who we just saw. The Canucks played them earlier in the week. 23 years old. They've been using him on the wing for the most part, I believe, but he can play the middle too, if I'm not mistaken. And this is one of those guys that you might want to bet on as someone that doesn't have a incredibly large body of work at the NHL level, and you would be betting on his upside panning out by playing a greater role in Vancouver than he has on a Dallas team that arguably has the deepest forward group in the NHL. This is his first full season in the league, and as of the time of recording, 25 points from 70 games for Maverick Bourque with the Stars.
Yeah, like the player, like him long term, but if your play is in the next two seasons, you need to build a contender around Quinn Hughes, and he being the answer down the middle, the 1-2 punch, it might be a little too early on that front. So I like the player. I just don't know if that's the timeline. I'm not sure he's the guy right now.
And that does it for our mailbag submission talking about potential players the Canucks could acquire this offseason. Thanks for your submissions. And that does it for this week's edition of the show. We're going to be back next week, and we'll be wrapping up the season when we do that. But this weekend, the Canucks face the Minnesota Wild. I'll have the call with Landon Ferraro right here on Sportsnet 650, Saturday night, 7 o'clock faceoff. And you, Randy, will be on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi.
That's right. We'll have that game as well, Minnesota and Vancouver, but also Leafs versus Habs. Both of those teams going to the playoffs potentially. It looks like the Habs are nearly there. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, they've already clinched, but the Leafs are in there, and an old-time hockey with the Montreal Canadiens, who look very good right now.
So that will be on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, and keep it locked right here on Sportsnet 650 for all the latest with the Vancouver Canucks. Again, we'll be back next week to put a wrap on the season. This has been In the Booth on Sportsnet 650.